Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Hello and welcome to High Energy Health. My name is Dawson Church, and if you've listened to the show for any length of time, you will know that you are a member of a fabulous community of people. One of our core values is community, and by listening to this show, by watching the show, by tuning in to these ideas, you are electing yourself into the group of people who is choosing to love themselves, choosing to wake up, choosing to live life consciously, choosing to question their assumptions, and also enjoy this wonderful sense of community we have. We human beings have never faced such global crises before, and they're making us realize we are one human family on this precious planet, and we have to pay attention to that fact. We need to learn to predicate our thoughts, our words, our actions on our collective future as well as our individual well-being. And so your being here, your tuning into High Energy Health is part of your declaration that I care. I care about myself. I care about my own well-being. The great non-dualist teacher Ramana Maharshi was asked one day, well, you know, Bhagavan, why are you sitting here in a cave in India? Why aren't you out there and meeting and speaking to the world? And he said, if you want to change the world, change yourself. So you are here for self-care. You are here for self-change. And as you will probably have noticed so far, I ask you in most shows to listen and watch with a pen and paper or a device handy and make notes. In fact, I often will stop the show and the flow of the show for a moment or two to let you do that. I'll recommend you actually make some notes about your insights, or we'll turn something a guest says into a little exercise you can do. And then I also recommend that you also translate your experience here into an action plan. So you wind up after sharing this time with us with a plan for how you'll apply these insights to your life. I know you'll be inspired by today's guest. I know you'll be inspired by today's show. And I so want this to be not just inspiration for you. I want it to be an action plan. I want it to be something you will implement. So be inspired and then ask yourself, how can I apply this in my life? Those insights might seem very small, and you never know when one of them will be the leverage point that shifts everything for you. So please listen actively in that way. Make notes, reflect on these things, and as we near the end, turn this inspiration into an action plan and know how you will apply it in your own life. So I'm so glad you're here. I so appreciate you being here for you, for all of us. It makes a difference. And the way we live our lives is able to shift not only our own worlds, but the world we live in as a whole. I had a delightful time looking through the book of today's guest, whose name is Nate Klemp. His new book is called Open. Open. And it is such a powerful concept as we'll explore here. He's a philosopher, writer, and mindfulness entrepreneur. He's the co-author of the New York Times bestseller, Start Here, and his work has been featured in the LA Times, Psychology Today, the Times of London, and many other places. He's also co-founder of Life XT and founding partner at Mindful. You can find out more about him and his work at his website, nateklemp.com. Nate, what a joy to connect with you and have you here today.
Dawson, it is such an honor to be here. Thank you for having me on the show, and thank you to everyone listening. I'm really excited to spend this time together.
It's going to be good. And this whole framework you have in the book of open versus closed, an open mind versus a closed mind. In the very first chapter, you have a little circle of the closed mind and then a big circle of the open mind. And how did you come to this framework for seeing life and seeing experience?
I came to this really through my own experience. Like many of us, I've had a personal experience of almost feeling like the space in my own mind is getting smaller. Like I'm increasingly distracted. I'm increasingly craving my screen, craving the latest news update, craving things like Instagram and email. And I was trying to figure out two things. One, how are we to deal with this predicament? Because I think in some ways this is the problem of our time. It's happening to basically everyone, so it's ubiquitous, but it's also fairly invisible. It's happening for the most part underneath the radar of our awareness. And so I wanted to understand this problem both conceptually, but also practically for myself. How can I live in this world where it feels like my mind is closing down? And that led me to try to figure out, well, what's the essential distinction here? You know, my background is in philosophy and we love these distinctions. The simpler, the better. So the more I reflected on it and researched and had a bunch of the experiences that I write about in the book, the more I realized that I think we can drill it down to two basic modes of being in the world. One is where we're closed. And I think we've all had experiences like this where you're stressed, you're anxious, you're overwhelmed, and it's like everything gets smaller. It's almost like looking through life through a long and dark tunnel where the only thing you can see on the other side of that tunnel is that problem or that person or that predicament. When we are more open, on the other hand, it's almost more like we're standing on a mountaintop, you know, where the view gets wider and more panoramic. And instead of seeing only that one problem, which may still exist, there you begin to see the possibilities surrounding it. There's more curiosity. There's more space. There's more, essentially, freedom. And I think that's the essence of the predicament here, that on some level we're losing our freedom as a result of just the technological advancements, addictive algorithms, things like that. And to be more open is essentially to be more free. And I think that's a project worth investing in.
So you come at this from the perspective of philosophy, but then right at the beginning of the book, you describe your experiment where you applied it. You weren't just merely philosophizing about what it felt like to be open and closed. You decided to live closed for a while. And one thing, the book is so funny because the way you describe that is a hoot. So describe your experiment, your personal experiment in living closed for a while.
Absolutely. Well, I am a philosopher, and my philosophical heroes were those writers and thinkers who applied ideas to real life. So people like Emerson and Thoreau, you know, Thoreau doesn't just write about presence. He lives at Walden Pond for 2 years and 2 months and writes about it. So that's the inspiration in the background. And as you said, I wanted initially to really understand, what is it like to close down fully and on purpose? Because I actually think we can't really understand that state of openness until we go all the way into the state of closure, till we really deeply understand what's happening here. So I decided to do that by running an experiment where I spent 3 days, all day, every day, just basically gorging on an endless buffet of mind treats in the form of email and news and Instagram. And, you know, I had spent so much time in my life, decades really, trying to avoid these things and adopting all sorts of screen time tactics. But the inspiration for this came from the Tantric Buddhist tradition, where there's this idea of feast practice and this idea that we can actually start to burn out the roots of our desires by going into indulgence rather than restraint. And so that's what I did. And I found a couple really interesting things. One is that there is this very significant connection between screen time and sleep. You hear people talk about this, but during this experiment, I would wake up at 2 in the morning, basically every day, just lit up with adrenaline. So that was interesting. The more interesting thing, though, is that by the end of this experiment, I realized that the true superpower of our devices that we carry around is the ability to give us this experience of novelty. And by going all the way with these devices, by engaging in this kind of weird indulgence-based practice where I was over-consuming, I had effectively destroyed that superpower of my smartphone because it felt like I had seen everything there was to see. And so what I realized is we can overcome these urges in a variety of ways. We can do the restraint-based approach, which I think is useful, and those tactics are great. But we can also actually overindulge but do it consciously. And that's another way of disrupting this momentum of closure that many of us are feeling in our lives.
And then when the experiment came to an end, when those few days came to an end, how did you transition back into Nate Clamp's normal life?
Well, the transition was really interesting because the day after, for the first day in 10 years, I remember I had the thought, well, this is where I usually grab my phone and I go to the bathroom and I, you know, check all the things, the weather and my Fitbit app and all these different things. And it's like the desire wasn't even there. And so the way I transitioned back was feeling like I was able to go into my ordinary life free from this seductive urge that's playing in the background all day, every day. And I will say, just full disclosure, that state of overcoming the addiction to my screen, it was temporary. It didn't last forever. But I found that you can run these little micro experiences of indulgence to essentially catalyze or reinvigorate that sense that really they're the novelty behind the home screen of our phone isn't all that interesting. And what's actually more interesting is what's happening right now in the present moment, this conversation that you and I are having, or my dinner with my kid where I'm hearing about her day at school, or my conversation with my partner. Like, those are the things that are so exquisitely interesting and powerful, and yet it's so easy to get distracted and caught up in our own mind stream or caught up in our devices that we miss it.
I think those examples of child, partner, loved ones, family are so powerful because I know I find, Nate, that every day when I finish work and then I connect with my wife, and occasionally one of our grandkids is over here, one of our kids is over here, and it takes a real recalibration for me to get out of doing all the stuff I do during the day. I do a lot of research and I write and I manage projects and then actually be with them. I have to drop into my heart. And that takes a real act of conscious volition to say, I don't want to just be this intellectual that I am all day. I want to drop out of my head into my heart. It's a real shift for me to do that. It's not all that easy to make that transition. So I think our families are calling us to that state of presence as you describe it every day.
I think what you just mentioned is so important that there are these transitional moments that are really essential that we often miss. And I don't know if your listeners know this, but before we started recording, we took a few conscious breaths together. We visualized the audience. And that is such a great example of one of those transitional moments because both of us, I'm sure, had a lot going on. I was writing earlier this morning and, you know, the house cleaners were here and I was making sure that they were out of the house before we started this recording. All that stuff, having that transitional moment was so powerful. And I think for all of us, it's a matter of just being more intentional and more conscious of those transitions and seeing if we can just adopt these little rituals like the one you have or, you know, I love check-ins with my family where we check in on the day or even just taking a couple of conscious breaths or at the end of the day, maybe doing a Shavasana where I lie down on the ground for 10 minutes and just allow myself to kind of just everything to dissolve and so I'm more present.
So before we go any further, I want to invite all of us here in this wonderful community to take a moment and reflect on that. And there are a couple of things I want you to reflect on and make a note of. One is what Nate is calling transitional moments. I want you to write down in your journal, on a piece of paper, on your device, I want you to write down what are your transitional moments during your day when you can make that shift from being focused on your regular life to being really present and, in Nate's term, being open, really being open to them to connection with them, to seeing their world as it is, not through the lens of your own preoccupations and mind chatter. What are your transitional moments? Write down three of them. So again, maybe sometime in the morning, maybe sometime during the day or in the evening. But what are your three transitional moments? So write those down. And then in terms of your action plan, how can you maximize the value of those transitional moments? And there are many ways you can milk them. You can amp them up. You can really bring yourself into the deep now, the full presence of the moment. What ways can you do that? Nate mentioned lying down, shavasana, just lying down. He mentioned breathing, so taking some conscious breaths. It might be listening carefully and intently. I mentioned dropping down into my heart. I can feel when I'm way up here in my head, so usually talking way too fast. So when I talk to my wife, I'll slow down, drop into my heart, and feel that heart area. So what are some of the ways that are comfortable, familiar to you, to drop into that? Write down at least one of those ways. So now we'll leave this segment. We'll have those three transitions and at least one way, and maybe more than one way, in which you can transition, be fully present in that moment. We're going to go to a break right now. For more on Nate's work, you can go to his website, nateklemp.com. His book is called Open, and I strongly and sincerely recommend you pick up a copy. And I can guarantee, when I opened it and just began to read the first few pages, I was totally sucked in. So you will find it's that way, and you'll find it's that way throughout the whole book. And there are so many powerful insights there. So definitely grab a copy of Open. You will find that from the very first few pages, it is a highly provocative and worthwhile experience. You're listening to High Energy Health. My name is Dawson Church. We'll be right back after a break.
The buzz about emotional freedom techniques, also called EFT or tapping. Millions of people have experienced breakthroughs in their mental, emotional, and physical health with EFT. Over 100 scientific studies show that EFT relieves pain, anxiety, and depression. If you or a loved one is suffering, download the free EFT mini manual at www.tappinggift.com today. That's tappinggift.com. Get your free manual at tappinggift.com today.
Make a six-figure income and help others overcome their deepest traumas, anxieties, and fears. It's easy to have a rewarding career in energy healing, and you can become certified in less than a year. Not sure if you'll like it? Try it. Download a free course sampler at newhealer.com. Taught by expert faculty at newhealer.com, you'll become skilled in techniques validated in over 1,000 scientific studies, and you can even train at your own pace while supporting your own health. So visit newhealer.com. Do it now. That's newhealer.com.
Stuff, stuff, stuff. Where can I contain all of my stuff? How about this? The Container Store, the original storage and organization store. And I found their link on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. They have containers for everything, including the kitchen, the bathroom, trash and recycling, traveling, spring cleaning, and dorm rooms. Just about everything you can think of to contain your stuff. The Container Store, right on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
Your DNA is not your destiny. There are many genes in your cells that are turned on and off by your emotions, your experiences, and even your beliefs. In his brilliant new book, The Genie in Your Genes, best-selling researcher Dr. Dawson Church shows how you can cultivate a stress-free mental state that activates the genes that boost your immunity and energy levels. Voted best health book by USA Book News, The Genie in Your Genes is packed with practical advice on how to apply the science of epigenetics for health and longevity. Get The Genie in Your Genes today.
Shh! Over here. Here's a secret for a virus-free computer. ESET.
They've been a pioneer in the antivirus industry for over 25 years. 25 years of innovative, top-rated antivirus protection. ESET's award-winning security solutions provide a safe online experience for over 100 million home and business computer owners. They are so affordable, fast, and simple to use. So be gone, you blue screen of death. ESET's on my computer. If it's not on yours, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ESET now.
Remember, freedom of choice. www.healthylife.net.
Hello, and welcome back to High Energy Health. I'm your host, Dawson Church, and I love sharing with you every week in this wonderful community about this wonderful inspiration and information. It's such a joy to unplug ourselves from the compulsive addiction we have to all the stuff going on out there and take time for reflection, take time for breath, take time for our own well-being. And what you're doing by being here at High Energy Health is you're saying, my consciousness is important and I love myself enough to fill it. Fill it with positive news, positive messages, positive ideas, positive content. The old saying in computer programming is garbage in, garbage out. But love in, nurturing in, kindness, compassion, wisdom in, and all those things then marinate inside you, and our minds then project those into the world outside too. So I'm so delighted that you're here at High Energy Health. Make it a habit. For more on Nate's work, go to his website, nateklemp.com. His new book is called Open, and it's a captivating read, so please do get a copy for yourself and explore his ideas in greater depth. Nate, in Chapter 3, you talk about political polarization, and there's always been a degree of political polarization. I think back to when I first arrived in the U.S. in the 1970s. There was plenty of it back then, but I also remember that Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill got together in different parties and had a lot of consensus about common values, and that seems to have frayed increasingly over the last 30 years or so. And today we do find ourselves in a lot of either-or discussions in politics. And so how do we deal with that? And please do share your story of how you personally brought yourself face with it and worked with that issue.
Well, first I want to just start by connecting polarization to the open-closed distinction we started with, because I think it's important to note that closure happens on two primary levels. One is internal, which we talked about earlier. It's that closing down to our own experience and seeking out refuge in our screens. But the other form of closure that we're experiencing right now is more external, that there's a way in which we are increasingly closed down to other people, particularly those other people who disagree with us about politics. And as you mentioned, this has always been around, but the statistics show that polarization is just getting more and more amplified. And I think we all have that experience. So in 1980, 47% of Americans felt warm and favorable toward the other party. In 2020, that number goes down to about 25%, basically drops in half. That tells us there's something new happening here. And so I think that if we're interested in exploring a more open mind, it's not enough to simply try to liberate ourselves from our devices. It's really important to change the way we think about the other side politically. And if we want to get radical, to actually engage with the other side. So as you mentioned, one of the things I did in this book is I really wanted to explore what happens when I put myself in just a radically different environment. And I live in Boulder, Colorado. It's a left of center community. I'm a left of center kind of guy. One of the issues I care about is gun control. And so I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to spend some time with the National Rifle Association? So I ended up getting my concealed carry permit and doing a training in rural Colorado. And it was just so amazing because I ended up immersing myself in this environment that was kind of terrifying to me, very different. And, you know, the views that these people held were totally the opposite of my views. But what I found, and there are a lot of interesting things that happened along the way, but the big thing, the mind-shattering insight that I came to was just seeing that it's so easy for us to caricature the people who are on the other side, to see them as the enemy, to see them as somehow less than us, to see them as idiots or morons or whatever it is. But I found that there was this shared humanity, that these folks were just like me in so many ways. They care about their neighbors. They have kids they care about, projects they care about. And so that to me is the really important insight and the valuable practice. Can we open to the other side and begin to see our common humanity? And that doesn't mean we're going to agree about everything. It doesn't mean that we're going to be happy about the outcome of the election necessarily, but it means that we start to see each other differently, more as humans.
You also recount an incident at the gun range where you were with two other people, and they were asking you really bluntly where you stood on this issue, and you had to grapple for a response. Would you mind just sharing that and also what you told them, what you said in response?
Absolutely. Yeah. So it was kind of funny. The beginning of this training, and I overheard a conversation between our instructor, who was a very hardcore, he was actually running as a Republican candidate at the time, between this instructor and one of my other classmates, and classmate was saying, I just think the right has all the best answers. And then he says, but I guess we shouldn't assume things here. And he points at me and says, what side are you on? And I had this moment of just like, oh my God, what side am I on? And I thought for a second, well, I'm just going to say what's true for me. And what I said is, I'm on the side of seeing if I can stay open to all points of view. And I thought that was just going to be a bomb and everybody's going to be like, what are you talking about? But these people who disagreed with me on almost everything, their faces started to light up. They all said, yeah, it's crazy that we don't talk to each other. We should be more open. So what I realized in that moment, which was very powerful, is that we disagreed about just about everything. Politics, even we had conversations about football, and they weren't watching football because of some of the political things that were happening. So we disagreed about almost everything, but there was one thing we could agree on, and that is that we should be talking to each other, that we should be more open. And so to me, that was a really affirming insight and an invitation for all of us to just think about what are the ways in which we can be more open to the other side. You might not want to do what I did and do a training with the National Rifle Association if you're on my side of the political spectrum, or if you're on the other side, the equivalent of that. But maybe it's just a matter of talking to that neighbor or that family member, or even just reading news from the alternative political perspective, you know, reading the op-ed page for a paper that has a different political perspective than your own. Those little steps can go a long way toward opening us up to the other side.
So before we go to the next break, I'm going to turn this into another exercise. What can you do? And again, I want you to write this down either in your journal, on a piece of paper, on your device, if you have to. But I want you to write down some concrete step you will take in the next 24 hours to expose yourself to an opposing point of view. And I would pick one with which you have complete 180-degree opposition. So pick one that you think the other side's crazy to believe in or to pay attention to. Pick something that maybe triggers you emotionally a great deal. What will you do? What might you do in the next 24 hours between now and this time tomorrow? And I want you to write this down and make this commitment to exploring that item and really being there with it. I also invite you not only just to expose yourself to that medium, to watch or read or listen to that particular point of view, I want to ask you to notice what happens in your body when you do. What's happening in your body when you're exposing yourself to that other point of view? So just notice what's going on inside your body. And you're probably going to find out that something is happening. This isn't just a intellectual exercise of trying to understand something. You're probably going to find there's some kind of visceral threat response arising in your body. You're probably going to have a rise in cortisol, a rise in norepinephrine, other stress, neurochemicals, hormones, and neurotransmitters. You're probably going to feel something in your body. And just notice that in your body. I'm not asking you to change it, fix it, heal it, do anything with it. Just to notice it. Just to be aware of that in your body. That signal from your body when you are deliberately taking the time and energy to expose yourself to that other point of view. So that's your exercise for the next 24 hours. And again, that one thing is able to start to open you to that perspective that Nate had after the meeting with those two men at the gun club, to be open. And into that openness, you are inviting the possibility of other people inhabiting that space with you as well. So we're going to do a break right now. You're listening to High Energy Health. Nate's website is nateklemp.com. His book is called Open. We'll be right back after a break.
You have a to-do list, right? Well, that list may be your biggest obstacle to success. Sure, it contains activities that help you achieve your goals, but it's also packed with time-sucking obligations that are not in alignment with your life's purpose. In a new white paper, Dr. Dawson Church explains the difference between a to-do list and a success list. Download it at successlist.net. Create a success list, and successlist.net will show you how to manifest your dreams at light speed. See successlist.net. Why do you attract the same kinds of people over and over again and look for love in all the wrong places? Scientific research has shown it's because of a personality pattern called your attachment style. Programmed early in your childhood, your attachment style dictates your relationship choices throughout your life. At LovingRelationshipsNow.com, Dr. Dawson Church demonstrates the three basic styles. A free quiz at LovingRelationshipsNow.com identifies the attachment styles of your friends and loved ones. Visit LovingRelationshipsNow.com.
Have you heard the buzz about emotional freedom techniques, also called EFT or tapping? Millions of people have experienced breakthroughs in their mental, emotional, and physical health with EFT. Over 100 scientific studies show that EFT relieves pain, anxiety, and depression. If you or a loved one is suffering, download the free EFT mini manual at www.tappinggift.com today. That's tappinggift.com. Get your free manual at tappinggift.com today.
If you like to spend your television viewing time learning about some of the things that you may have missed in history class, or if history was your favorite subject, then you should check out the link to the History Channel on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. Order DVD sets by series or by subject matter right from our homepage while you still enjoy your favorite HealthyLife.net show.
Have you heard the buzz about emotional freedom techniques, also called EFT or tapping? Millions of people have experienced breakthroughs in their mental, emotional, and physical health with EFT. Over 100 scientific studies show that EFT relieves pain, anxiety, and depression. It works quickly and has no side effects. If you or a loved one is suffering, download the free EFT mini manual at tappinggift.com. That's tappinggift.com. Don't suffer when help is at your fingertips. Get your manual at tappinggift.com today.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Hello and welcome back to High Energy Health. I'm your host, Dawson Church, and I love sharing with you every week on this program. Isn't it wonderful that we are taking this time to fill our awareness with positive ideas, inspiring thoughts, tuning in to constructive media, and able to really shift our worlds by the quality of the direction of our consciousness. Thank you for joining me here. Make sure you join me here every week. I also want to ask you to do one other thing, which is a profound act of compassion. And I want you to go and look through our shows. You're going to see all kinds of interesting topics there. And I want you to email a link to a particular show to a friend of yours who is suffering. If you have a friend who's buffeted by PTSD, I had a 25-year research career in working mostly with veterans, somewhat with refugees, mostly with veterans, though, with PTSD. And if you have people in your life who are suffering from PTSD, email them a link to a show on that topic. If you have a friend who's struggling with money, if you have a friend who's struggling with anxiety or depression, find a show and email them that link. Let people know that these ideas exist, that these resources are there. They don't have to suffer. We have so many remarkable new therapies nowadays that can address all of these issues, and you can play a role in letting the people in your world know that they exist. So please do take the time to email a link to someone in your world, someone in your life who you know is suffering. Nate, you talk in the book about the whole phenomenon of assisted therapies. And of course, these can be drug-assisted therapies like ketamines. They can be plant medicine like psilocybin, ayahuasca, and ecstasy. There are a lot of ways now in which these substances are making their way back into psychotherapy, back into the healing process after having been banned or ignored now for many, many decades. And they're opening up exciting new possibilities, and they have real limitations. I'd love to have you share your take in the book on this, because you really have a good balanced approach to this in the book.
I entered this project with a lot of skepticism about these potential compounds and pairing them with psychotherapy. However, I knew that if I was going to study and explore what it means to open the mind, I had to at least venture into this terrain a little bit, at least explore the research. And when I started to look into the research, it was kind of mind-blowing that there have been so many amazing advancements in how we treat various mental health conditions using both these compounds and some sort of structure of support like a psychotherapist. And so I ended up doing this myself, and that was kind of the theme of the whole project. I wanted to always explore the research, but then also explore, well, what is this actually like at a phenomenological level? And for me, what was really interesting, you talked about PTSD and anxiety and things like that. I had a very deeply rooted fear of flying that probably went back 20 years or so to 9/11. And in one of my first ketamine-assisted sessions, I was actually going to fly in a couple days after the session. And so that was in my consciousness. And I had this experience where, you know, took the compound, put on the eye mask, the music, the headphones. And when I lay back that day, it felt like I was on a plane. It wasn't a real plane, but it was a plane in my consciousness that felt like a real plane. And I had all of these experiences where it felt like I was flying, but for one thing, none of that anxiety that I had usually carried with me into that particular circumstance was there. And I even witnessed myself dying in a plane crash, and it was oddly beautiful. I remember saying to the therapist, oh my God, I just realized a plane crash is God. It's amazing. It's like a work of art. And I realize that sounds like a crazy drug story, because it is a crazy drug story. However, what was really interesting about it is that then when I went to fly on future flights, my relationship with that fear had radically shifted. And what I started to realize, both through that experience, but also through looking at the scientific literature, is that in the right conditions, the pairing of these compounds with psychotherapy, it can give us access to some of those darkest, most traumatized corners of the mind that we simply cannot touch in ordinary consciousness. For in my case, I had meditated on flights, and I had done everything you could imagine in my ordinary consciousness, and it didn't really seem to move the needle at all. But when I was able to go into those experiences with this just radically more open perspective and re-experience them with a different set of emotions attached, all of a sudden that created a new set of memories in my brain and it created a new set of experiences each time I flew. And so I think that we need to be very careful with these substances. I recommend always having a guide, always having a therapist, but they can also be quite powerful.
And so what are the qualifications that you found to that kind of a way of opening?
Yeah, I think that with all psychedelic experience, you know, Ram Dass, I think, used to say, you get to spend 2 hours living in the body of Christ, but then after those 2 hours, you go back to taking out the garbage. And that is true. And so there is a risk of trying to go back to those like really high ecstatic experiences rather than trying to simply integrate some of those insights into everyday life. So I think that's a risk. I think there are certain people with health conditions that should meet with a doctor. You know, there are certain health conditions that are contraindicated for taking these kinds of compounds. But I think the biggest thing is that when it comes to a practice of presence or a practice of opening, it's useful to use those experiences as occasional moments where you're able to break open some of these traumatic memories or to see something differently or have that radical shift in perspective. But then the real work is that moment-to-moment everyday work of staying a little bit more open while you're standing in line at the grocery store, while you're sitting in bumper-to-bumper traffic and the guy behind you is honking at you, you know, while you're waiting for your kid to come out of soccer practice and they're late. Those are like the real moments. And so to your point, I think we don't want to start to think, oh, well, now I just need to see if I can get high all the time. That's the path. I think, no, the real path is see if we can integrate these insights into the midst of the chaos of everyday life.
Yeah, and that is really the ultimate goal, even of meditation. And some of the Dogma traditions talk about how meditation is really the full meditation period is just training wheels, just practice. And the goal is to be able to live in that state, eyes open. I know when we do EEG studies, we have people in both these states, eyes closed, still in a beautiful environment of a meditation, a full meditation setting, supportive community. But then the goal eventually is to meditate, eyes open, and then eventually to carry those elevated states through into everyday life. And so it's really interesting to read those traditions and how they emphasize that whatever the training wheels are, whether they're psychedelics, whether they're meditation, however you're getting to those elevated states, the eventual goal is to be carrying them forward and integrating them in your everyday life. And so what you might reflect on as we take our next break is how you can bring your elevated moments into everyday life. It's wonderful to feel peaceful and loving when you're sitting there looking at a statue of the Virgin Mary or Kuan Yin. Are you able to feel that loving when you're in line at the grocery store and the person in front of you is taking a long time to finish their transaction, or another driver cuts you off in traffic, or you have one of the many other annoyances that happen in everyday life? How are you then? How can you apply those inner states to that outer experience? Because that's where the rubber meets the road. We're going to go to a break right now. You're listening to High Energy Health. Go to Nate's website, nateklemp.com, for his previous books, for his new book, Open, and for more about his work. We'll be right back after a break.
The buzz about emotional freedom techniques, also called EFT or tapping. Millions of people have experienced breakthroughs in their mental, emotional, and physical health with EFT. Over 100 scientific studies show that EFT relieves pain, anxiety, and depression. If you or a loved one is suffering, download the free EFT mini manual at www.tappinggift.com today. That's tappinggift.com. Get your free manual at tappinggift.com today.
Everyone knows that losing weight fast is dangerous. In fact, the U.S. Government Center for Disease Control recommends losing no more than 1 to 2 pounds a week. But is that true? Startling new research shows that people who lose weight rapidly often have better long-term results. Now, award-winning researcher Dr. Dawson Church and registered dietitian Karen Donaldson team up to review all the evidence at 10poundsaweek.com. Download their free report at 10poundsaweek.com. That's 10poundsaweek.com. Make a six-figure income and help others overcome their deepest traumas, anxieties, and fears. It's easy to have a rewarding career in energy healing, and you can become certified in less than a year. Not sure if you'll like it? Try it. Download a free course sampler at newhealer.com. Taught by expert faculty at newhealer.com, you'll become skilled in techniques validated in over 1,000 scientific studies, and you can even train at your own pace while supporting your own health. So visit newhealer.com. Do it now. That's newhealer.com.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Your DNA is not your destiny. There are many genes in your cells that are turned on and off by your emotions, your experiences, and even your beliefs. In his brilliant new book, The Genie in Your Genes, best-selling researcher Dr. Dawson Church shows how you can cultivate a stress-free mental state that activates the genes that boost your immunity and energy levels. Voted best health book by USA Book News, The Genie in Your Genes is packed with practical advice on how to apply the science of epigenetics for health and longevity. Get the genie in your genes today.
Hello, and welcome back to High Energy Health. My name is Dawson Church. I'm so delighted you're here. And for more on Nate Klemp's work and his new book, Open, go to his website, nateklemp.com. Love to see you there. Love to see you availing yourself of all the resources you will find there. He has an online course, brief online course you can take there, as well as links to his books and his other work. All of that's at nateklemp.com. Nate, as we live open lives, as we live expansively, not shut down, not contracting, it is a wonderful experience. It's just a fantastic experience. And people like Mindy Rinpoche, who you mentioned in the book, and when they study Mindy's brain, they find that he has 7 times the amount of the brain waves of integration, compassion, happiness, gratitude, joy as the average person. So these people who are living in this open state, they have remarkable experience, radically different from that of the person who's closed or even just in an ordinary state between the two. So I'd love to have you share with us what that is like, what a life spent that way feels like, and what it looks like for you.
There's a metaphor I like to use here that when we live in the closed mind, some people say it's like living in a prison cell, but I don't think that's quite right. Because there's actually a lot of pleasure, very fleeting short-term pleasures there. So I think it's more like you're living in a Four Seasons hotel suite with a bottomless buffet of treats, a mini bar, a cable TV with all the channels, Wi-Fi, everything, with one small catch. You just can't leave this cage of pleasure, right? And that's kind of the experience of being closed. You know, we have these devices that offer unlimited forms of pleasure, but they're pretty base forms of pleasure. They don't last very long, and they become very addictive to us. When we open, I think it's kind of like unsealing that door and being able to venture outside of that small space. And what's paradoxical about being open is that I think on the one hand, there are these amazing, very pleasurable moments of openness that we've all experienced. You go to an amazing concert, you see a sunset, you have a great dinner with your partner. You go to an amazing museum, whatever that looks like for you. We all have those moments where we can feel that expansion and it's coupled with pleasure. But we also know that life consists of so much more than pleasure. There's the daily irritation we might experience, or anger, or sadness, grief, things like that. This is just part of the human experience. And so I think the other side of opening, which can be quite beautiful, but it is paradoxical in its own way, is when we encounter those moments of sadness, instead of running away and retreating and pulling out the phone and going on Instagram, allowing ourselves to just see what that experience is like. My therapist, actually, in the psychedelic-assisted therapy sessions, she had this line that she liked to use, which is, what's it like to be with whatever the experience is? What's it like to be with blah? What's it like to be with outrage? What's it like to be with anger? And I think that, to me, is the definition of being open. It's both the pleasure that occasionally happens, but it's also being open to all the other stuff and seeing if you can become friends with it and find it interesting and explore it and investigate it. And that, to me, is a really interesting life and a really different life from what we're habitually sort of structured to do in our modern age.
Yeah, in the studies of those monks and nuns like Minger, they find that they have a great ability to regulate emotions. So they're feeling all of the same emotions that everyone feels, and yet they have this ability to regulate them. Mm-hmm. And with the ability to regulate negative emotion comes the ability to upregulate positive emotion. So they also have this amazing ability to not just feel that joy and appreciation and love and compassion, they can actually amp it up to an amazing degree. And imagine having that ability in our lives to both cope with the experiences you're mentioning, that if you are living an open life, you don't get any kind of exemption from all of the normal challenges of being human. As Nate is saying here, it's part of the human experience, but you can be with it. You can be in the question, as his therapist structured the question, what does it feel like to be in that space? Now you're open even to that, and then suddenly that's not a threat to you, and you don't shut down when you're confronted by that. So what a powerful way to approach that. And let's just have you do one last exercise over here before the end of our time together, and that is, about what part of your life can you ask that curious question? What part of your life could you ask that curious question, what is it like to be with dot, dot, dot? Okay, now maybe you're feeling sadness, grief, loss, you're feeling irritation, anger, various kinds of negative emotion, maybe you're triggered by some part of your life, and it's tempting to just get involved in that triggering. That triggering can easily make you close. When you ask the question, what is it like to be with this? That's an open question. So about what difficult part of your life can you simply be curious? Write the answer down. What thing in your life is bothering you about which you might just be curious, and then ask yourself that question. Isn't that a fabulous question? Isn't that a fabulous way to approach your challenges? We know we will have challenges in the future. We've had them in the past. We have some right now. And we can simply sit there in the mystery, curious, open, and not allow these things to trigger us to going back into closeness. Nate, thank you so much for this beautiful way of approaching our world, approaching our challenges, seeing where we are, and the shift that this change from closed to open can produce in our lives. Just in the last minute or so, I'm so curious about where you're going next with all of this.
Well, Dawson, first of all, I just want to say it's an honor to be here, and I love how practical and useful you make this inquiry for your listeners. So thank you for that. Where am I going with all of this? Well, it's a daily practice for me to see if I can interrupt that momentum of closure we've been talking about, to see if I can have more of those moments of openness. As a writer, my next project is actually another relationship book. So my wife and I wrote a book called The 80-80 Marriage about 3.5 years ago, and we're going to write a new book. It's called something, well, I actually can't even release the title yet, but it's going to be about busyness and how do we live in a state of busyness where we're also connected to the person in our life who matters most. So that's my latest project. That's what I was writing this morning before I got on the podcast.
I'm sure that you'll be doing more experiments with practical applications of that and challenging yourself in the process.
Always.
Again, for more on Nate's work, go to his website, Nate Kemp. Nate, what a joy to have you here and connect with you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And for everyone listening, you have just given yourself an hour of immersing yourself in positive ideas, positive insights, and having an action plan in how to apply these in your life for that open life. That's what Nate and I wish for you, a life of openness, a life of happiness, a life of resourcefulness, a life of joy, the life you deserve. And by being here, sharing with us every week, you're putting yourself on that path for that kind of a life. Thanks for being here. Thanks for caring. Till next time, be healthy, be happy, fill your entire life with love.
Epigenetics is the most exciting new field in science. It's the study of influences that turn your genes on and off. Epigenetics is a breakthrough in health and longevity, and you can learn all about it from two of the world's foremost experts. Dr. Bruce Lipton is the author of The Biology of Belief, and Dr. Dawson Church wrote The Genie in Your Genes. In a free presentation at ConsciousGene.com, they show how to apply epigenetics to boost your health, happiness, and energy levels naturally. Visit ConsciousGene.com. That's ConsciousGene.com.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
You have a to-do list, right? Well, that list may be your biggest obstacle to success. Sure, it contains activities that help you achieve your goals, but it's also packed with time-sucking obligations that are not in alignment with your life's purpose. In a new white paper, Dr. Dawson Church explains the difference between a to-do list and a success list. Download it at successlist.net. Create a success list, and successlist.net will show you how to manifest your dreams at light speed. See successlist.net.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Why do you attract the same kinds of people over and over again and look for love in all the wrong places? Scientific research has shown it's because of a personality pattern called your attachment style. Programmed early in your childhood, your attachment style dictates your relationship choices throughout your life. At LovingRelationshipsNow.com, Dr. Dawson Church demonstrates the three basic styles. A free quiz at LovingRelationshipsNow.com identifies the attachment styles of your friends and loved ones. Visit LovingRelationshipsNow.com.